Blog Talk Radio.
The Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me. So mad, feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. I can't twist the truth, it knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation, and marches alone can't bring integration. When human respect is disintegrating, this whole crazy world is just too frustrating. And you tell me China, then take a look around, just tell me Alabama. You may leave here for 4 days in space, but when you return, it's the same old place. The pounding of the drums, the pride and disgrace. You can bury your dead, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to take race and tell me.
All right. Good to be back, everybody. James Bostic, A Conservative Perspective here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. And it's good to be back. You think you know your government? Seriously, you do? You think you can trust and believe in it? Probably some facets, I think, of our government still merit a certain amount of trust. And I don't know where you're at on that. This is a legitimate question. We can go on from one end of the spectrum to the other on that. And I don't know where you're at, but it's a legitimate question. And whatever your thoughts may be, if you feel we got a good government, if you feel that it is a government that is representative of the best interests of the citizenry first and foremost, I don't know where you're at. But if you are moving in that direction, you might have some second thoughts after listening to our guest tonight. And we'll go ahead and bring him up. Our guest this evening, being very generous with his time on remarkably short notice, less than 24 hours, as a matter of fact. Our guest is Mr. Barton Shively, United States Marine Corps, and January 6th survivor. This story that he's going to turn loose on you guys tonight is a pretty moving one, pretty compelling one. And the thing that bothers me about this is so few people are talking about it. You don't hear about it on in the establishment media. You don't hear about it. You know, Tucker Carlson did some stuff one time. Well, you know, the couple of nights he showed some video footage that would the footage that had originally been released of January 6th. That's it. Nobody knows the hell these people have been through. Nobody knows what their suffering is like. And I'll tell you something about the D.C. jail. Not that I'm speaking from experience, but based on my research. It's a hellhole, man. It's awful there. It was so bad, and it has a history, a long and storied history of being a terrible place. It was so bad in the 1970s when G. Gordon Liddy, who was one of the Watergate participants, was sentenced. He spent his entire sentence in the D.C. jail. 1972, and you. Guys, any of us that have been around long enough to remember what a lot of urban centers like New York and Washington, D.C. and Detroit and Philly were like in the early 70s. There you go. Mr. Shively, welcome. Bart, it's good to have you here on a conservative's perspective. And again, thank you so much for being so generous with your time. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you very much. And I want to just thank you for having me on. It's an honor to be with you all.
Well, likewise, Bart. I'm not exactly sure how you want to be addressed. We can go other, but you can just feel free to call me James. What I would like to do, like I was telling you at the beginning of the program, if you wouldn't mind, start with a little bit about your time in the Marine Corps and then coming out of that as a citizen. And one of the things, like we discussed earlier, I was curious to what was the series of events that led you to coming to the decision that on January 6th, you were going to go to Washington, D.C.?
Well, let's start out with the Marine Corps.
Okay.
I served from 1985 to 1989, active duty, and then I was in the reserves from 89 till what, 4 years from that, so 93.
Right.
So just a little background before we get started into that. As a child growing up, talking to my family, well, my grandparents, basically I would inform me of my, you know, relatives of the past, and two of my relatives were messengers for George Washington throughout the war.
Wow.
They made it the whole way through, which is amazing, because you figure, you want to get a message sent. The first person you want to kill is the messenger. So I was very proud of that. After the war, George Washington gave them property, gave every, you know, all the enlisted people and officers property. And mine, settles up in middle of Pennsylvania in English Center. Their names were English. So they settled up there. So that's just a little background. Plus, three of my relatives fought for the Union in the Civil War. One was a cavalryman captain. And the other two were in infantry. My lineage, I have, I think I have a little stake in the game here in America.
Sure.
I think the two that came over, they came over, I think they had to have come over on either the Mayflower or the Pinto. I'm not sure which one. I haven't done a 23andMe, research, thing or anything like that. But, I felt growing up, as I got into my teenage years, I felt an obligation, because I wanted to serve. I wanted to join the Marine Corps because I felt like, you know, I was playing football in high school. I played a lot of sports in high school. I was very good at football. I had a lot of scholarships if I wanted to go to play football. But in my heart, my dream was to be a Marine, because Marines are, to me, they were the, you know, the baddest, the toughest, you know, and I wanted to see if I could, you know, make it. So I joined the Marine Corps. I love my country very deeply. I wanted to serve. There's a lot of good people in this country that can't serve, and I wanted to serve for them and protect them and, you know, do my duty as a patriot, as a citizen of this country, and give back a little bit and not just take.
Well, that sounds to me, what you sound like, my people have been here for a long time too. We fought for the Confederacy, but we're not going to let that stand in the way right now.
Oh, don't worry about that. I'm a Confederate at heart. Trust me, I'm a rebel at heart.
And what it sounds like is that, you know, it's folks like you, and again, you said it. I think you said it best. And you got stake in the game. Your people have been here for a while. You're embedded in this country. You have served and sacrificed for this country. You love this country and believe in it. So I think that you're really representative of, I think there's a lot more people like you out there than what we have, what we're faced with, the enemies that face us inside this country as well as without. When you got out of the Marine Corps, and or was there anything else you wanted to talk about as far as the Marine Corps goes before I take off?
No, not really. Basically, I enjoyed my time in the Marine Corps. You know, it was a lot different than what I expected. It was a little, you know, harder mentally than it was physically for me, because I was, you know, physically I was pretty much in shape. I actually played football in the Marine Corps, and I actually had Purdue came up to me, a couple guys from Purdue, scouts, and asked me if I wanted to go to Purdue on a full ride. And you know, me being the you know, the Marine that I am, I was like, you know what, I really don't want to, you know, study anymore. I don't want to, you know, because studying was not my forte.
Right.
So I didn't go. I mean, everything happens for a reason. So I'm kind of like, you know, all my friends are like, why didn't you go? Oh my gosh, you could have been this and that. And I said, you know what? I know myself, and it would have been a disaster. Trust me. Football would have been good, but everything else probably wouldn't have been so good. So yeah, I didn't go that route. I did try out for the pros when I got out of the Marine Corps. I trained for a year. I didn't have an agent, so I went to a free agent camp that the Marine or that the NFL has, and that was, it went pretty good. You know, I didn't make it. Obviously, it's very difficult to make it into the NFL if you're not, you know, through college.
Right. There's a certain pathway there that they like to see.
That's right. Yep. So yeah, just that's about the end of my extent in the Marine Corps. I loved it. I started out in motor transport, and I moved up to the armory. So I wound up being an armorer when I got out. So that was my extent in the Marine Corps. No wars, thank God. Yeah.
We have a proud veteran, a man that loves his country. He sees what's going on, and I know that you see the same things that I see, and you might even see them a little more clear based on your life experiences. But, you know, we run into what we ran into culturally with Antifa, excuse me, the BLM, and all the craziness that the opposition to Donald Trump was laying out in the path of the country. And what were the things that happened that made you decide, you know what, I'm going to Washington on January 6th, and I'm curious as to how long a time frame, you know, what was the window on that turnaround time from you making that decision? What were the things that led up to that decision, and how quick did you make it when you weighed all those factors?
All right. Well, let's go back a little ways. You know, I'm 56 years old, so, you know, right. I served under Reagan. I got out because of Clinton, because Clinton destroyed the military. So during that time, you know, I saw what was happening and I realized what, which way we were headed. And, you know, when Obama came in to presidency, I was mortified because I couldn't understand how that guy could be, you know, be president.
Right.
But the things that he did under his presidency really shocked me. I mean, there's a lot of things that he did people don't know about that are just were devastating to this country. You know, Obamacare is one of them. But, you know, I was part of the Tea Party. I went to a lot of Tea Party rallies. And I think we actually, from his mouth, Obama's mouth, he said that the Tea Party was his biggest deterrent. He was afraid of us because of, you know, our grassroots, you know.
Right.
You know, getting together, all of us getting together, grassroots, and it was, you know, a hindrance to him because it drew attention to his, you know, ego. So, you know, I talked to a lot of people that were in militias and stuff like that. And, you know, people weren't doing anything really, you know, this country was based on people standing up. We stood up to the, you know, if you think about it back in, you know, the Revolutionary War, we stood up to the greatest power in the world. England was the greatest power on the earth at that time. And we actually stood up to them, you know, farmers, you know, merchants, you know, just average people just wanted to be free. We didn't want to have all that, you know, regulation on us from overseas, from the king. So, yeah, I looked at it like, you know what, we're losing our freedoms. People, you know, people need to stand up. People need to understand that there's going to come a time when you're going to have to make a choice. It's either you choose your freedom or you're going to choose to be a slave. And I mean be a slave, because if look at what's been happening since Biden's been in. You figure when Trump was in, we had energy independence. The economy was doing great. People were prospering. Everything was crime was down. Heck, he had the Middle East under control, for crying out loud.
Right.
Nothing was happening. He was getting the Middle East together. You know, and then here comes, you know, the fraud election. Biden gets in, and I'm telling you right now, it's an Obama third term is what it is.
Sure.
So he's destroyed these people. He hates America. He even said it. He hates this country because we are so prosperous, and he thinks that we're arrogant. Well, you know what? We're not arrogant. We're confident. We know that we're Americans. We're free. We're the last free country in this world. You know, Ronald Reagan said it best when he said, "We're the shining light on the mount on the hill." Once you distinguish that light, it's over. There is nowhere else you can go to be free. So, you know, that being said, I took it upon myself. I said, "You know what? I've watched everything that's happened in politics. I've watched, you know, BLM come about. I've watched Antifa. I've watched all of it." And I sat back and I said to myself, you know what? This is wrong. This is wrong. Because these people were attacking old people. They were punching old citizens, you know, kids and citizens, old folks. You know what I mean? That's not right. You know, you can't
terrorism.
Come up here and act like, exactly. It's terrorism. And it was in our own country. And it was like, nobody was standing up to these people at the time. So I thought, you know what? I was talking to a bunch of guys in different groups. And you know what? I wasn't quite, you know, there yet to commit fully to do J6, but my friend called me and I did go down to DC on two other separate occasions for Trump rallies, one in November and one in December. And I really enjoyed it. I mean, I had a great time. You're being around a bunch of people. It was electrifying. You know, everybody came together under the same banner. We want peace. We want freedom. We want liberty. We want justice, equal justice, you know. Yeah, it was great. And then my buddy was like, hey, this was like the night before J6. My buddy called me up and he's like, hey, Bart, man, do you want to come down to the Capitol tomorrow? Trump asked everybody to come down and support him. And I was like, no, I really don't want to come down. It was a Wednesday. It was like a Tuesday night. And I was like, no, I don't want to go because no one's going to be there. You know, it's going to be a weekday. People have to work. I just don't want to, you know, I said, no, I don't think I'm going to do that. Well, we talked more and more. And I liked the guy. He was my buddy. You know what I mean? Because he was assaulted. The last time we were down there, I had left and came home. He stayed and got assaulted by BLM. And he basically asked me to come down there and protect people, the people. So I was said to myself, you know what? I really can't. After thinking about it, I said, you know what? That's what I'm here. I think that's what I'm here on the face of this earth to do is protect people that can't protect themselves. That's why I joined the Marine Corps. You know, so I said, you know what? You know, once a Marine, always a Marine. We don't quit being Marines just because we're not in the Marine Corps. So I said, you know what? I'm going to come down with you, buddy, and I'm going to do what we have to do and keep people safe, you know, and yeah, I'll come down. So I drove down Wednesday morning. I got there early. I joined up with he basically was trying to get into the Proud Boys. I was not. I don't want anything to do with the Proud Boys. I'm not into them. But you know, I applaud what they do to protect people. But I don't aspire to be part of their group. So I was with him, and he was with the Proud Boys. So I'm following him around. We walked up. We were there probably about 10 o'clock, and we walked up. We started walking up the, you know, from the monument to the Capitol, there was like a grassy area.
Yeah.
That goes straight up. Yeah, yeah. Well, we started walking up there. It was about 400 of us. And, you know, I kept asking my buddy, I said, what are we doing? Why are we walking up here? Why are we leaving the crowd of people to see Trump? He's like, I don't know. You want to go back? And we can go back if you want to go back. And I'm like, no, just keep walking. I mean, it seemed harmless. You know what I mean? There was nothing going on. You know, nobody was throwing slurs at us or anything. So we were just walking. We walked around the Capitol. We came back around. We were over on Pennsylvania Avenue, and we all broke up to go to the bathroom and eat and whatnot. And then, Pence's entourage drove up, couldn't get through because we were in the way. So he drove around, came up. Everybody was like, hey, come on, come on, come on. It's Pence. So everybody got together and we walked up to the barricades on the west side, the little bike rack things.
Yeah.
And we were standing outside the bike racks. There was probably, I don't know, there had to have been thousands of us standing there at that time. But this was all, we were there. I was there before Trump even spoke. I mean, we were up there mingling around before Trump even, you know, started speaking. So I remember standing there talking to my friend, and I can't think of his name, the guy that ran over to the bike rack and started pushing the bike rack. But anyway, so I watched him basically shout back over. This is in the very beginning. He was the only one at the bike rack, and he yelled back over at the crowd, come on, come on, come on, let's go. And I'm thinking, what is he talking about? Go where? Why? What are we doing? You know, I mean, because I wasn't there for that. I didn't go there to attack the Capitol. You know, I went there
right.
to protect people. And that was my bottom line. I had, listen, as much as I despise this government, and I'm going to tell you this, I think that we've lost our way throughout the years in our government.
Yes.
It's no longer we the people, it's you know, we the corporations, or we the politicians, you know. It's the power brokers, the people that want to keep their power and keep you down. I think that's the problem with this country. There's too many chiefs and not enough Indians. So to me, I'm not a big fan of the government, because our government basically to be successful was, I think Thomas Jefferson said, for this government to operate, it needs to be operated by Christian people. Only Christians need to be in power. That's what I think he said. I'm pretty sure that's what he said.
It's unsuited to anyone else. Our government, our form of government is only for a just and moral people, and it's unsuited to anybody else. And
that's right.
And you're right. We've traded places, and that's who we've got running the show now.
That's exactly right. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, what's going on right now? Why is he calling everybody up here? And then everybody just started pushing their way up into the up towards the bike rack. Well, as soon as that happened, something lit a fire in my butt, and I was like, I'm in, let's go. So I was fired up. I felt the electricity of the people. The people were fired up. I pushed my way up to the front, and just as Samsel, that's it, he pushed the bike rack over and knocked the cop down. I saw all that. I was standing next to Ray Epps. I was actually, I remember him standing right next to me as I was standing there at the bike rack.
Right.
And I passed through Ray Epps. The cops backed off. We all pushed forward. We rushed the back of the Capitol. There was probably a handful of Capitol police there. There wasn't a whole lot of them there at that time.
Right.
I just thought to myself, you know what? I don't want to be caught in a group of people. I want to, get away from the crowd. So I made a beeline to the right, towards the, I don't know if you know anything about the back of the Capitol, but at that time they had like this lifeguard stand. That's what it looked like to me, like a big lifeguard stand back there. And I was going towards that to get away from the crowd. And I was the first one, I pushed myself. I was the first one back up on the back stage area. And I was stopped by, five Capitol police officers. And they told me to turn around and go back to the crowd, to the line where they were holding the line back at the crowd. I was like, okay, I wasn't there to hurt the cops. Let's get one thing straight. I don't have anything against police officers. As a matter of fact, I wanted to be a police officer at one time in my life, and I think they serve a great purpose. But I do think that a lot of times police officers have a very difficult job, and they have to make split-second decisions, and sometimes they don't always make the right one. So that being said, they're humans. Let's just face it. They're human beings like we are. So that being said, I turned around. I started walking back towards the crowd. I had a couple cops follow me. I got over to the steps that go down a little bit into the crowd, and they pushed me down the steps. That's the first thing that I remember is they pushed me from behind.
Down the step.
Yes, of them pushed me down the steps, and I almost fell on my face. So I turned around and I went, I'm sorry, people don't get offended with me, but I said to myself, look, I'm an American, I'm a veteran, I love my country. I pay my tax. I'm a citizen. I love this. You're not going to push me. You know what I mean? So I turned around and I said to him, stop pushing me. What are you guys doing? You know what I mean? Why are you treating us like this? And they didn't say anything to me. They just said, get back. And I was like, get back. You asked me to get back and I got back. And you pushed me down the steps. And I turned around and they pushed me again backwards. And that's when I grabbed them. I grabbed two of them by their jackets. And I said, you need to stop pushing me. Because I am not pushing you. I am not assaulting you. You shouldn't be allowed to assault me if I'm not assaulting you. So I let him go, and I didn't grab him anymore. And there was a guy behind the guy. There was two guys right in front of me at the top of the steps, and then there was another guy behind him. There was two white guys, and then the guy behind him was a black guy. And I remember I looked up at the black guy, and he looked down at me, and we actually started to talk. I mean, we had a conversation that really calmed me down, because he was cool. I mean, he understood what was going on, and he actually calmed me down, because he said, you know, we talked, you know what I mean? It was weird.
Right.
It's like we were in a cloud. We talked and everything was cool. I calmed down and everything was cool at that moment. And then to my left, I heard everybody go, "Let's go." And they just pushed forward, and the cops, you can't stop thousands of people that were coming. They were just coming. So I took off, just like they did. I took off to the right. I went to the right scaffolding. If you're looking at the back of the Capitol, there was two scaffoldings. I went to the right one, and I was by myself again, and I was confronted by, four or five officers. They were, you know, trying to, you know, push me back. And I remember grabbing two of them, and then the captain of the Capitol Police came over and said, "Leave him go, let him go." And I was like, "Thank you." And then he's like, you need to stop this." And I said, "Stop what, sir?" He's like, you got to turn around and stop this melee." And I said, "I don't know what you're talking about." He goes, "Well, they're looking at you like you're their leader." And I said, "I'm not their leader." And he's like, "Well, you need to go out. You need to turn around and stop." I said, "Okay, sir, you give me a bullhorn and I'll walk out on that stage and I will turn around and I will talk to the people." And he said, "I'm not giving you a bullhorn. Just turn around and tell them to stop right now." And I said, "I'm not going to do that. I'm not their leader." And he said, "Well, then get down." So I did. I got down and I walked down the line. By that time, they were bringing in the riot police, the ones with the riot gear. And they were all lining up back on the backstage. And I remember walking down the line, and I was talking to them. I was like, "Hey, man, anybody here? Is anybody a veteran? Are you guys veterans? Do you love your country? Why are you defending these people that behind you that are lying and cheating and screwing the American people out of their one God-given thing as a vote? Why are you taking that away from us?" I was just talking to them, you know what I mean, trying to be, you know, trying to get into their heads, trying to see what you know, where their heads were at. And a lot of them were, you know, they didn't really say anything. So I remember I got down to one point, and this one guy was, I was standing there, and I was trying to talk to him, and he started jabbing me with his nightstick. And I was just like, you know, "Why are you doing this, man? Why are you being violent to us? We're not being violent to you." And I walked all the way down to the end, to the next scaffolding area. And I jumped up on stage and I turned around, and I'll be honest with you, man, it was the greatest moment. I turned around and it was like William Wallace, the movie with, Mel Gibson. I turned around and I raised my hand and I went, "Yeah!" And everybody was like, "Yeah!" I was just like, that was an amazing moment for me, because I was the only one up on the stage and the cops were telling me to get down. And I'm like, all right, I'm getting down. "Yeah!" And everybody's like, "Yeah!" All right, so then I got down and I was standing there talking to two officers actually talked to me. Two of them were in Iraq, and I was talking to them, and I was explaining to them that this is wrong. You guys should be on our side. I know you have a job to do, but blah, 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 you know. And then I saw a lot of melee happening to my right down at the other scaffolding. There was a lot of scuffling going on. And I said, "Man, I got to get down there. I got to see what's going on." So I walked down. I mean, this is crazy how I remember this. I started to walk down in front of all the cops were on my left with all their riot gear and their shields and their batons and their, you know, their face shields. As I was walking down to where the melee was, everybody that was on our side, the Patriot side, backed up, and it was just like an moment, because I'm walking down and there was nobody in my way, and the cops just stood there and watched me walk down. I walked all the way straight down to the end. I turned the corner and I went to walk, you know, towards where the melee was. Everybody backed up. It's all on video. You can watch it. Everybody backed up. So it was just me. I'm by myself facing these cops. I'll tell you right now, the most vicious police cops that were there that day was the MPD. You know, the MPD was there. The other ones that had the fluorescent green jackets on, they're the ones that caused a lot of the problems. They're the ones that caused a lot of the violence and the hurting people. Because I remember as I was walking up the line, there was about five or six MPD officers to my left, and all the, Trump-supporting patriots and everybody that was there, you know, to support Trump, they backed up. So it was just me. I walked down that line, and I saw a guy. I saw a sergeant in the Capitol Police just start spraying people with mace. And I said, you know what? I walked up to that guy, and I said to myself in the back of my head, I said, what would Chuck Norris do at this moment? You know what I mean? And I thought to myself, kick the mace out of his hand. That would be amazing. So I know, stupid move, I know. But as I walked up to that, it didn't work out very well, I'll tell you. I didn't even come close to the – I'm a big guy. I tried to kick it. I didn't even come close. Behind me or behind them, there was a guy with one of those looked like a fire extinguisher, but it was a mace, like a pepper spray.
Right. Yeah, one of the big.
And it was
right.
Just oh my Lord! It was just it hit me square in my face, and totally blinded me. And the MPD officers tried to hit me. One of them hit me in my shoulder, pushed me back. And I was there with some patriots, so they watched out for me. They grabbed me and pulled me back away from the police line because the police were grabbing people and shoving them back behind the line and arresting them. So I didn't want to be part of that. So my buddies pulled me back, and I remember standing over there by the. The structure that I talked about, the lifeguard stand thing. I'm standing there. I can't see anything. My friends are using, mace neutralizer, to get the stuff out of my eyes. And it took a good, 10 minutes to get that to where I could even see. So I walked out of there. They walked me out of there. And I'm telling you, man, it was hard to get out of there because people were just funneling up in there. And I think I was the first casualty because when I got down at the bottom of the steps, this girl walked up to me and she said, what's going on up there? And I said, it's all hell's breaking loose. And she goes, well, can you tell us what's going on? And I said, excuse me. I said, yeah, I can tell you what's going on. So I opened my big mouth, not knowing that, there was a guy with her with a camera, and later on found out that she was with CNN. So, I didn't say anything, bad or anything like that. I just told her what was going on. And, that's really what got me in trouble. That's what got me caught was I was on that night when I got home, I was all fired up. I mean, I'll tell you what, when I got home, I thought life was great. You know what I mean? Cause I just thought life was wonderful. I mean, this was the people's house. This is the people's house. Your audience needs to understand the Capitol is the people's house. It's not the politician's house. It's not anybody's house. It's the people's house. It's our house. So we have a right to be there. We had a right. It's our First Amendment right. It's to address, politicians, right?
For redress, to list our grievances and rights and to demand redress for them. Yeah,
absolutely. That's absolutely right. We have that right. I mean, if you remember, 2021 was a mess. All across the country, there was, mayhem, chaos, officers being, abused and people being hurt by these, anarchist groups, I just sit back and I think to myself, how is this possible in America? Where are the patriots? Where are the people that love this country so much, you know, where are they? And that's the thing, you know what, and this, let me just jump ahead real quick. when I was in C2B, which is the gulag in the D.C. jail, we would have conversations about this. I mean, there'd be four or five of us just sitting around talking about, where are the American people? You got patriots sitting in jail right now. I mean, good people, people that are, they have no criminal records, but they've been whitewashed by the government, by this government, this corrupt government. They have been put us, they've been punished. They're POWs. That's exactly what they are. They're prisoners of war, a political war, because of Joe Biden and Obama and Clinton and Soros and all these characters that play a role in governing this country, who hate this country, who want this country to be a socialist, communist country, Marxist country. These people are basically BLM and Antifa are their brown shirts. Make no mistake about it.
Yeah.
They'll send these people out to cause chaos and to do things in their name, and they'll do it. And it never comes back on the people at the top, never. Like AOC, Rashid Tlaib, all these people that hate this country, it never comes back to them, you know. And these people don't get in trouble. I never heard of anybody they may have gotten arrested, but I remember Kamala Harris set up a fund a fund to get them out when they got arrested.
Bail out the BLM guys when they were trashed in Washington D.C. While we're talking about that, when you mentioned Ray Epps, what are your thoughts concerning him?
I think he's you know what? A lot of people said that he was an FBI informant. He's not an FBI informant. We've come to the conclusion in C2B that he was working for Homeland Security.
Okay.
And he helped set this up. To me, he's a patsy. He's a traitor. Because January 5th, he was out at nighttime yelling and telling people to go inside the building tomorrow. That's what he was saying. He's saying, we need to go inside the building tomorrow. We got to go inside the building. And people that were standing there that are, you know, smart people that know how the government works, you know, how deceptive they are. And they were saying, FBI, he's an FBI agent. He's an FBI plant. He's an informant. You know what I mean? So, I think he's a traitor. I think he instigated. I think he was inflammatory. You know, and that's to me, that hurts because I think he's an ex-Marine, isn't he?
I think he's got a record of military service, but I'm not exactly sure what branch.
Okay, well, there you go. So him being a former military person, we all know in C2B that there was FBI agents there that day that were inflaming us, that were getting people riled up and instigating people. Maybe, I don't know, did you ever hear of the Azog Brigade?
Yes.
Were they talking about in
Ukraine, yeah, the Azog Brigade?
Yes. They were there.
Those are Nazis, guys. I mean, you know, that's...
Yeah.
Everybody thinks they've lionized these people, but nobody understands they were Nazi sympathizers, and they still are.
Yep. That's right. And they were there that day. And here's a little tidbit that I don't know if your listeners know this or not, but we talk to a lot of people. When we're in C2B, we're in contact with a lot of people. That do a lot
could
of research.
Can you explain that term, please, for the folks that don't know that? Could you define C2B, please?
Okay, yeah. C2B was our pod in the jail in D.C.
Okay.
We had a special pod that if you were in J6, that's where you would go, because if you went anywhere else in that jail, you would have gotten stabbed to death. Because that's what happens in that jail. Let's be clear. You may not hear it on TV, but I'm going to tell you right now, being in C2B and being where we were, we saw ambulances on a regular basis come to that jail and take people to the hospital. There's drugs, there's fentanyl, there's any drug you probably want is in that jail. Gangs are in there. If they would have put us in general population, we would have been dead. Some of us would already be dead because we would have got stabbed. Because we're high profile, and these kids in jail want to make a name for themselves, so they would stab us. So they made a pod for us, and it was C2B. That's the name of our pod, and that's where we all stayed in C2B. So, and that was a blessing because I'll tell you what, I did not want to be in general population, especially because I talked to a lot of the guards, and a lot of the guards told me a lot of bad stuff goes on over in the other side of the building. We were on one side of the building, then there's another building. We had about 400 inmates on our side, and on the other side there was about 1,200. So, you didn't want to be there. very racist. It was a very racist, bigoted building because everybody. I mean, I don't want to be. I'm not a racial guy. My best friend in the Marine Corps was black. I love him to death. He was my best friend. I had nothing against black people, but the whole place, we were the only white people in the jail, put it that way. So it was like reverse racism. And I can tell you that for a fact. I can tell you stories, and no lie, I can tell you stories about some of the racism that went on in there. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked here. So, where was I? What were we talking about?
We were talking about Ray Epps, and basically, I know that there were agents provocateur all over the place there.
Oh, yes. That's why I wanted to tell you that. Yes. Through our contacts in C2B, we found out that there was a group of people there that day that are black. They were black ops. These are the people that they call ghosts. You never hear about them. Their exploits are never told. These people are the people that you just – You never hear about them. They just go and do their thing, and then they get out. You know what I mean? They were there that day, and they had orders to kill us if we got out of hand. If we did anything like started shooting people or hurting people, their orders were to shoot us. And I was taken back by that. I was like, wow, I mean, I served my country. I would have died for this. I would have died for this country, hands down. And now I'm at a protest, protesting, government integrity in voting, and they want to shoot me because I'm upset because they stole my vote. Are you kidding me? That's not America. That's not the land I fought for. I was very naive. I was very naive when I was in the Marine Corps, I'll tell you.
I read something the other day, and I want your thoughts on this. It is government, and there's no question about that. And it is evil, and it is corrupt. And I'm saying this about Republicans and Democrats both. And everybody looks at the agencies in terms of the craziness that went on that day and their role as catalysts, as agitators in what happened. And all the focus is on the FBI, the CIA, Homeland Security. But I don't think that there's been enough focus put on Democrat political leadership. You want to talk about people who invented dirty tricks? I mean, look who they got elected in the last election. These guys know how to do political intelligence, and I guarantee you that a lot of the political leaders, the same ones who were decrying and jumping up and down that guys like you got locked up and went through what you went through, played their role, and they're in it just as deep as these agencies, you know, the intelligence community, the FBI, Homeland Security. The Democratic political leadership is in with these guys up to their necks, and I guarantee you they contributed to working on fomenting all the problems that happened on January 6th, just like the FBI, just like the CIA, just like the State Department, just like Homeland Security.
Absolutely. We could sit here and talk all day about what I did or what my fellow inmates did, you know, or what happened that day. But let's talk about the real problem. The real problem was Trump asked the Mayor Bowser and Pelosi if they would like a National Guard to protect the Capitol. They
exactly.
both turned it down. They both turned them down. Let me just tell you something right now. If there was National Guard there that day, that would have never happened. That would have never happened. I promise you that. Speaking for myself, as a former military person and a veteran, I will not assault another veteran. I'm not going to assault, you know, our military. I'm not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it. So that would have never happened. It would have never escalated to that level. So if you think about it, everything that happened that day happened for a reason. It happened because the Democrat political apparatus wanted that to happen because they want to punish Trump. And they can't get to Trump, so what do they do? They get to his supporters.
Right.
If they can show that his supporters are violent, out of control, we're crazies, we're white supremacists, whatever they want to call us. If they can prove that, which they tried to do with this scam, you know, January 6th committee bullcrap, which was a total lie, then, you know, that's what they do. They try to, the whole thing was a scam. It was a setup. Pelosi knew it. They all knew it. They all play their part. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It never should have happened. It never should have happened, period. And the fact that it did happen and the police were understaffed, basically they were understaffed. I think it was because Pelosi, being the House Speaker, she is head of the security for the Capitol. Am I right?
Yeah. Well, that's why Trump went to Bowser and to Nancy both. To see, and you're exactly right. And nobody wants to say anything about this. Nobody ever touches on this. And if you want to look at the root cause, there it is. It was they
That's
worked
right.
on trying to set up a perfect storm to where, I don't know, maybe conceivably it was going to end in a bloodbath.
Right. And
that may have been part of their calculations, you know, on the if-then continuum that you know these guys always have, and there's always some kind of contingency, and then they make it look like it was anything but the government.
Well, I can tell you this much. I went the night of the election, I went to bed about 11 o'clock. Trump was ahead.
Right. Yep.
100,000 votes in Pennsylvania. He was up 100,000 votes. I went to bed, and I've been on this earth 56 years. I've seen elections. I've seen them all since I've been born. I have never seen where somebody has 100,000 votes going to bed. I went to bed at 11 o'clock. I woke up at 6 o'clock the next morning, and Trump was down. You know, I forget how many votes he was down, and I'm thinking, how in the heck?
Yeah.
It was nighttime. What the heck is going on? You know what I mean? How is that possible? And and then everything started to come out, you know, and I know the guy that drove the truck, the 18 wheeler that had all the votes in it from New York down to Pennsylvania. And that truck was disappeared. The trailer with all the votes in it that disappeared. Remember that?
Yes, I do. And
yeah,
again,
I know that.
And that's just And this kind of crap was happening all over the country, Bart. And
yes.
It's all, and every time it came up, it was always classified and dismissed as an isolated instance.
Oh, you know, this makes me so angry. Everything that they did, that the Democrats did on that night, they did it blatantly.
Sure.
Because they knew that nothing's going to happen to them. You know, the Republicans, let's face it, the Republicans can't tie their shoes right.
No.
They're the ones, and every time they get in power, they do nothing. Nothing. You know, they don't hold anybody's feet to the fire. They don't come together and support each other. It's like a big incestuous fight inside the Republican Party. It's like we have like different fractions that fight against each other. So we can never come together and get anything done like the Democrats do. You know, the Democrats say, okay, well, we're going to do this, and everybody votes for it. You know, we don't have that. We always fight and bicker.
There's no motivator. There's no real motivator. There's no real muscle. And George Wallace, a long, long time ago, said, you grab a handful of each. You get five of each, five Democrats, five Republicans. You put them in a bag and shake them up, and you close your eyes, and you stick your hand down in that bag, and you pull one out, and it's not going to make any difference which one it is. They're all the same.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, what we have to do, and I've said this a lot, and I know you'll probably agree with it, there ain't no cavalry, and if there is, it's going to have to be us, and we're going to have to get here in the nick of time, but – the only way that happens is with an informed and disseminating voter base. And
right.
until people start paying attention, man, and we're down to 3 minutes, Barton. You haven't even gotten halfway through your story here, and we're killing it.
Well, if you want to keep going, I'm all for that.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't have time this evening, but what I would like to do very much is maybe if you're available next Thursday, we can pick up where we left off on this.
That's great. Yeah, I have a lot more to say.
All right. Well, and we still got a couple of minutes here. Ladies and gentlemen, the conversation's been compelling, and if you've been listening, good on you, because you've had a heck of a program tonight. Mr. Barton Shively, United States Marine Corps, again, January 6th survivor. We're only halfway through the story. Barton's told us about what it was like there that day on the ground. And he was one of the first people with eyes on what was happening, because he was in that first wave of people on January 6th that made contact with the government forces there. And he's an 18-month survivor of the D.C., the District of Columbia jail, and probably, probably the worst jail in the United States. And we're only halfway through the story, and so he's generously agreed to come back on next Thursday. But Bart, when we've got a couple of minutes here, having gone through this experience, and I know you're going to tell us more about what happened when you were tried and convicted and sentenced next week, when you got out, when you finally got shook loose from all this and you were genuinely free from the entanglement of the government, what were the first things that you thought about in terms of being back with us?
The first thing that went through my mind was the American people need to understand and appreciate their freedom, because it can be taken away from you in a heartbeat. Schumer say? He said we can indict a ham sandwich.
Yeah, you can indict a ham sandwich. And the intelligence community's got six ways to Sunday of getting you.
That's exactly right. I was so happy to be out of that jail. I cannot tell you. I praised God, my Father in heaven, who I love dearly. My freedom, I'm not taking my freedom for granted anymore. We as a nation, I'm talking to the people now. You need to listen to me. We need to stand up. If we do not stand up, we are not going to have a nation left. I'm reminded of the saying, if good people do nothing, evil will prevail, or something like that.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And that's exactly what's – listen, put the beer down, get off the couch, stop watching TV, stop watching porn, get involved in this government, get involved in your in this country. There's a lot of good people in this country, and a lot of them can't fight. They cannot defend themselves because they're older people or they have handicapped or something. We have to fight for them. We have no choice. If we are able and willing and determined, we can take this country back the way it's supposed to be. That I have no doubt in my mind. But it's not going to happen if we're all sitting around watching football on Sunday and worrying about, you know, what am I going to wear tomorrow to work, or, you know, what's going to happen, you know, what am I going to have to eat today? You got to get past all that. It's bigger than that.
And it's bigger than Democrat, Republican, too. And you're absolutely right about it. This is not a right wing, left wing. This is a constitutional thing.
Yes.
And if we don't understand the Constitution, and a lot of people out there don't, Bart, you know this. If we don't understand the Constitution, we're sunk, man. We are absolutely done.
You know, you'd be surprised. I mean, I know we all hate BLM. If you're right, you hate BLM and you hate Antifa and they hate us and blah, blah, blah. But when it comes right down to it, we're basically fighting for the same thing. You know, they don't want police brutality. I don't want police brutality. Equal rights. I want equal rights. You know, I don't want a two-tier justice system. I don't want that. You know, I want my politicians to listen to what I say and not blow me off because they don't live in my state anymore because they live in D.C. You know, let's get back to where you're supposed to be. I think these politicians should stay back in their home states and listen to their people instead of going to D.C. and being bombarded with a bunch of, you know, people coming to kiss their asses all the time and give them money. And, you know, pleading for them to, you know, vote their way on certain issues, which drives me crazy.
Well, yeah, and you're absolutely right about that, man. It's like as soon as they get to Washington, D.C., their constituency changes. And it ain't the guys that took them to Washington. It's the guys they've met up with when they got there.
That's right.
And it's, you know, it's... Orrin Hatch once said that it's impossible to go to Washington and return an honest man. And here's my thought on this, and we'll just go ahead and close up with this. You know, there's no politician on earth that's going to vote himself out of a job. So the idea of term limits is a pipe dream. Now, there may be some conscientious types that would go, you know, and I'm sure there are probably some principled men in Washington, D.C., not a whole lot of them, but I'm sure there are some. That, you know, if they made a commitment to that, they would stick to it. But my thinking has always been this. We voted them in. We vote them back out. If they're not doing what we expect them to do, if they do not carry out the mandate that we send them as a constituency, as voters, to Washington, D.C., you know, then what the hell are we doing reelecting them? We need to move them out and find somebody else that's gonna be representative of our interests. That's the only thing we can do.
Well, you know, that's great. That's a great idea. But let me just tell you, a lot of these people that are in D.C. are not elected. They're appointed. They either get, you know, their votes are, you know, you, but there's people in D.C. that have been there for 30, 40 years. There's no need for there's that's ridiculous. You know, that's absurd. You know, and I'm talking about the right and the left.
Absolutely.
You know, your vote, the thing is, the votes need to count. Votes need to matter. You know, and the way things are going, they haven't changed anything. Pennsylvania just, the judge said, what does he say?
The absentee ballots, the mail-in ballots have to be dated. And if they're not of the big deal,
big deal. We don't want mail-in ballots. We don't want the mail-in ballots. Both the Republicans and the Democrats both said in the past that mail-in ballots is a clear way of cheating, and they both said it. That's, they both said it. It's in history. It's already been said that they know that this is cheating. They know they can cheat by voting by mail-in ballots. So we need to get back to in-person voting. You go to the poll, you flip the switch, and you walk out.
Yep.
You know, because let me tell you something. Let's say I have a household of five people. The ballots come to my house. I just happen to get them before the rest of my family does. I fill them out the way I want to fill them out and mail them back in before my family even knows they got them. There's five votes.
Yeah, and that's how Joe Biden got elected.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, and ballot harvesting, or what is it?
Well, yeah, Dinesh D'Souza did a great movie on that, 2,000 Mules, about what had happened in Atlanta and how hard they worked.
That's right.
Stealing the election.
That's right.
That's all the time we got, folks. We had to go a little extra here. We're talking with Barton Shively, January 6th survivor and concomitantly a survivor of the District of Columbia jail. We took an hour tonight and a little bit extra, and so you're going to come back next Thursday, Bart?
I'll be here.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to it again. Thank you so much for your time. We're going to pick up where we left off next Thursday, so you're not going to want to miss this. Barton Shively, Ground Zero, and on January 6th, and you heard it right here on Roller Derby. Bart, thank you so much for being with us. I'm going to be talking to you before the week's out. And we'll get everything set up for you to come back on next Thursday. Again, thank you for being so generous with your time on such short notice. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Barton Shively.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Terrific stuff, man. That was great. That was really compelling. I knew as soon as we got to talking, we weren't going to be able to get it because this is just a huge story, okay? And this is one guy. This is one guy who was there when the wave broke, okay, he was right there. He was with the first people who made contact with the government. And this is just, it's unbelievable what happened. And his story is like thousands of others of people who suffered, people who, you know, they railroaded. Guy's a United States Marine. He would have at any time laid it down for this country had he been ordered to do so. This is the same country that's treating its citizens the way that it's treated them, not just on January 6th, but in small ways, all for the last 40, 50 years, maybe longer than that. How does a tiger kill an elephant? One bite at a time. And that's what we've been seeing since Jimmy Carter. Let's go ahead and say Lyndon Johnson. Okay? They've been nibbling away. They've been biting and they've been chipping away at our individual freedoms as well as our collective freedoms, trying to tell us that the Constitution is this living, breathing document that's constantly open to interpretation when it's not. It is a flexible and remarkably resilient document. But it says what it says, and it's very plain. When the founder said the right to keep and bear arms shall not be impeded upon, they knew what they were saying. They chose the word arms specifically. Okay? If they meant muskets, they would have said the right to keep and bear flintlocks or brown vests won't be impeded upon, infringed upon, excuse me. That's all there is to it. Oh, well, I guess we're going to go ahead. I'm about out of gas. Once again, I want to say thank you to Mr. Barton Shively for coming on. I'm looking forward to having him back next Thursday. You heard what happened. We'll recap a little bit of that on next Thursday, and we'll continue with this amazing story from an amazing man, Barton Shively. And that's all the time we got. So I'm going to go ahead and sign off. We're going to be heard here on Patriot Nation Radio Network, Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. At some point, there's going to be a video component that we add, simulcast through StreamYard. Yeah, whatever. Okay. Well, it's not radio anymore, right? And if you guys know me, it's radio. And when you start adding video, then it's not radio anymore. It's television. And this face was made for radio. Anyway, that's all the time we got. We will be back next Thursday continuing our conversation with Barton Shively, who is there as a January 6th survivor next Thursday. And we will be taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll talk to you then.